Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The U.S. and its closest allies refuse to give peace a chance in Ukraine and Palestine. The word peace is not part of their lexicon. In the meantime, Israel has been given the green light to do whatever it chooses, including ignoring international law, as well as sidelining the rules of war. Crosstalking Palestine, I'm joined by my guest, Dan Kovalik in Pittsburgh. He's professor of law and author of The Plot to Scapegoat Russia. In California City, we have Craig Pasajardua. He is co-host of The Convo Couch, as well as a fill-in host for The Jimmy Dore Show. And in Berlin, we cross to Kavark Amasan. He is founder of Syriana Analysis. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Let's go to Berlin first. Kavark, as I said in my introduction, the United States and its closest allies are not interested in peace anywhere in the world, and particularly with this new conflict that has arisen in Israel and Gaza. We hear all of this talk about, will there be a land invasion where there won't be? Why the hesitation? The weather's bad, or they're waiting for reinforcements for the Hezbollah. All the reasons are rolled out here. But they don't have a political strategy, and that's why a military strategy, in my opinion, is not only going to be difficult, if not doomed to failure, because they never think about the day after. Go ahead, in Berlin.
Actually, they don't have a political strategy because they haven't thought about what's coming next after this military escalation in the Middle East. In the region, we can see that there are different players and they are coordinating between each other, for example, Iran, Syria, and also non-state actors such as Hezbollah, Hamas, and Islamic Jihad, and they have their military strategy against Israel. And also, they know if things go out of control, they have a political agenda how to end this conflict or to de-escalate. However, from the American and European side, they have invested so much in the basket of Israel that the only thing that is visible now is the military escalation. And what comes after the military escalation, if there is going to be negotiations, for example, are the Palestinian side, the Lebanese side, or any of these parties concerned of the conflict going to negotiate with who? Are they going to negotiate with the United States? The United States is an integral part of this conflict. And Europeans, unfortunately, they have made themselves, again, an essential player on the side of Israel. They didn't have to do that. Let's remember, a decade or two ago, the French or the Germans, they were pretending that they can play a mediation role between different conflicting parties. They're not pretending that anymore. Nowadays, you cannot differentiate between the foreign policy of Washington and Brussels. There is no distinguish anymore. And this will create a backlash in the global south, especially in the Middle East, and the increasing sentiments, negative sentiments against the Europeans as well as against the Americans. A decade ago or 20 years ago, the people were able to differentiate between Europe and the United States. And now we can see that there is a collective West, and they have given a carte blanche for Israel to commit its war crimes in front of the entire world. We're watching.
Well, and Kavodik, by the collective West, and you're specifying Europe, they will be culpable. They are now culpable for the crimes that are being committed by their, quote, ally, Israel. And Dan, the issue of deterrence, this is how Israel formulated its entire security policy, is that everyone was terrified of it. That's changed dramatically. And if things don't play out well for the Israelis, and I don't think it will, they'll never get that sense of deterrence back, unless they want to commit a genocide in Gaza. And that will have its own repercussions around the world. Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, I think that the mask, of course, was taken off when Hezbollah defeated them pretty roundly several years back. And then, of course, frankly, given the great security breach that happened on October 7th, you know, Israel's proven itself to be vulnerable. And now, of course, it's been threatening this land invasion for over 2 weeks now. And it hasn't done it. And why? Because the world knows it really can't do it.
It can't do it
safely. It can't do it without incurring incredible losses. And one of the reasons why, let's face it, is because it's an army of conscripts to the extent that they have experience at all, it's frankly in bullying children and women in the West Bank. I mean, this is not an army that is battle-hardened. It's not prepared to fight people who actually are trained fighters. And so it's, at least for the moment, feigning this land invasion. But the world knows why. It knows it can't do it. So now, as you mentioned, they're essentially committing genocide or certainly ethnic cleansing and war crimes. And they will pay a steep political and diplomatic price for this.
And everyone that backs them as well. Pasta in California, one of the things we've seen in looking at urban warfare, it's the great equalizer. Okay, it's the great. So you can be barefoot with a shotgun, and you can be an Israeli trained soldier, but you're all equal in the rubble. Go ahead, Pasta.
Yeah, I think history has shown for quite some time a large technological army still is at a disadvantage when they're going in on an offense to play against a defensive army that knows the terrain very well. And, you know, like Dan just said, the IDF is not prepared for this. They're not ready for tunnel warfare. But what's really amazing to me is that all the bombing that's going on hasn't really affected Hamas's military positions whatsoever. Like our good friend Jesse Ventura from Predator would say, they're dug in tight like an Alabama tick. They're down there. And the IDF knows if they go in there, they're not ready for this warfare. So they will be wiped out, if not really taking a lot of damages. Just the other day, they tried to go in the middle of the Gaza Strip, and they've already lost a bulldozer, a couple tanks, and they had to flee by foot. So this is just dead on arrival for them if they try to go in, and that's why they're hesitating right now.
Pasa, that's what we're told. I tend to think it would Hamas inflicted far more damage than we're being told. Because, I mean, let me go back to Kvark in Berlin. It's really quite amazing that this information war, the hospital incident, where the New York Times turned around and bent itself into a pretzel saying, oh, well, actually, it looks like the Israelis didn't do it. There's no evidence whatsoever that has been presented to the world public opinion to back that up. I mean, again, the empire of lies. Go ahead in Berlin.
It doesn't matter, Peter. The truth doesn't matter. What matters is what they say is accurate, and they are pushing this narrative not only through their traditional media outlets. They are paying advertisements on Twitter, on YouTube. If I open my YouTube now and if I watch any video, the advertisement that come are paid by the Israeli government telling me what I should believe. If I walk in the streets here in Berlin, there are these screens in the streets, in the train stations, and everywhere there are paid advertisements that I have to feel sympathy toward the Israelis. Well, I feel sympathy to the civilians in Israel who were whether murdered or they were kidnapped by Hamas or any other militant group. But I do not feel sympathy with the government of Israel for carpet bombing the Gaza Strip. What's the strategy of Israel now, the military tactique or the bank of targets of Israel by carpet bombing the Gaza Strip? The only goal is to force the people to leave to the south and then to add pressure on the Egyptian side so that Egypt receives 2 million Palestinians and hosts them in camps in the Sinai. This was also confessed by Dani Yaalon on Al Jazeera TV that said that temporarily, of course, wink, wink, that they have to go there until they finish with Hamas. No, the goal is ethnic cleansing. Push them to the Sinai. And when the Palestinians go to Sinai, and they try to come back to Gaza because this is their homes, and they try to use force to come back because Israel will block their access again to the Gaza Strip, then Israel would say, now there is a danger coming from the Sinai, and they will try to create another buffer zone, just like they created the buffer zone between Syria and...
And they'll also say, but these people left of their own volition. Okay, Dan, what we're seeing is the Nakba 2.0. Okay, even Israeli officials use that term now, which was apparently verboten, but now it's used again. Dan?
No, this is a tragedy on a scale I don't think any of us have seen in our lifetime. As you say, this looks a lot like 1948. The last I saw, and these numbers are changing by the hour, but the last I saw is 1.4 million Gazans have been displaced. That's over half the population. And they're going to continue to displace people. and they're going to kill tens of thousands of people. Again, the last number I saw was over 2,500 children have been killed in Gaza. And that was as of yesterday. I'm certain it's higher now.
But Dan, you know, we've all put into question this land invasion. I tend to think it's not going to happen, or there'll be some kind of, you know, photo op thing. But I don't, because of what happened in Lebanon. They were humiliated right there. So, Dan, there's the only alternative is just to turn it into a parking lot and kill tens of thousands of people, while Joe Biden, in his senile mind, is backing it up. Dan.
Yeah, well, and I, you know, Joe Biden, Netanyahu need to be investigated by the International Criminal Court. They both should be in The Hague. You know, a lot of us are watching this. It's hard to get through the day without crying and seeing the babies being killed and knowing that my tax dollars are helping pay for all of this. I'm speechless at times. This is a terrible crime.
Dan, I want to speak for all of us and our viewers. I have seen countless hours of. I can't watch it anymore. It is so disturbing, and I don't know. It should disturb us all that we're watching ethnic cleansing in real time. So when you see that bomb go off, you know at that second people were killed. You can see we're voyeurs of a tragedy. It is really morbid. And that's what I think that is very indicative of Western culture. We can sit and watch the ethnic cleansing of an entire group of people eating popcorn. All right, I'm getting a little emotional here, gentlemen. I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Palestine. Stay with our team. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. To remind you, we're discussing Palestine. Okay, let's go back to Pasta. Pasta, what does Biden get out of this? What, you know, Macron, as we speak, is there. I don't want to shock anyone here, but he's come to talk about a two-state solution. I mean, that, you want to laugh in that idiot's face, okay? After 50 years, and you're going to go back? Okay, Israel doesn't want that, okay? And the U.S. has enabled it, okay? What does Biden get out of it? What does the American people get out of this, Pasta?
You know, I don't know what they get out of it, but I understand that they're completely bought off by it. I mean, AIPAC controls our whole Congress. But just really quickly, Peter, I also want to just talk about, while we were talking about the possible invasion, I'm a poker player, and I look for people to tip their hands off or give those tells. I don't know if you saw, but one of those Israeli officials had the laminated card with all the, oh, look what we took off a Hamas soldier. I think that's the next move by Israel. I think they're going to actually use chemical warfare. Okay. They've been dropping leaflets in the north telling people that if they don't leave and go to the south, they're going to be an accomplice. So I think they're going to actually try with chemical weapons and do the same thing they did with the hospital. Oh, it was Hamas. It was an accident. It was a rocket. Look for that coming. As far as what Biden gets out of it, I really don't know if the United States gets anything out of it, but I do know we are very much heavily controlled by the Israeli lobbyists in this country.
Yeah.
I mean, RFK said that the Israel represent an aircraft carrier for the United States in the Middle East. And after their withdrawal or partially withdrawal from Iraq, and they're minimizing their presence in the Middle East because they're hyper-focusing now on Far East Asia and also in Ukraine, it makes sense for the United States to continue this strategic relationship with Israel in the Middle East. Otherwise, they will lose completely their leverage in the region. And the Chinese and the Russians will come and have an absolute control over the region. And God forbid and establish peace, because as we can see, the Chinese and the Russians are mediating between different conflicting parties in the region, whereas the only party that is igniting fire, more fire in the region, is in the United States, because the economy of the United States is built up on war. It's that's how they make profits, and there is a different philosophy in Moscow and in Beijing. Personally, I do not want, for example, to be dominated by the Russians or by the Chinese, but their approach is different. They treat you as a peer, and they respect your domestic affairs. And we have seen this very clearly in Syria. We have thousands of Russian soldiers in the country. They have military bases there, and they give advices to the government, and they give recommendations. They never force the government to take any decision. And this is how things should work, because when there is mutual business relationship between these regional powers in the region, the possibility and the possibility of war will also diminish. This is what the Americans do not want, especially after this rapprochement between Saudi Arabia and Iran. And see, for the first time, Bin Lahyan, he traveled to Riyadh in order to coordinate with the Saudi side. Yep. And this is very important for the region in order to avoid escalation. Otherwise, Israel is faced with two dire options. One is either to go on a ground offensive against Gaza, and that could lead into regional war because Hezbollah will most likely intervene from the north. Or two, they don't go into the Gaza Strip, and this will be interpreted by Hamas, Jihad, and Hezbollah as a victory for them. So, in my opinion, politically, it's Israel is in a very hard position, and this is the end of Benjamin Netanyahu's career.
It gets down to prestige, okay, Dan. You know, if we seek advanced chemical weapons being used against the people of Gaza, then Hezbollah has no choice. They will lose face. They have to go in, okay? So Israel is forcing their hand if they want to do, you know, commit genocide on the cheap. I can't believe I just said that, but that's what they may be thinking. Dan.
Yes, and if Hezbollah goes in, Israel will lose. They cannot defeat Hezbollah. And Hezbollah will have a lot of political and moral cover to do that. So I think Israel has no game plan. Let's be honest here. They have no game plan.
Well, they don't have a game plan for Ukraine, so why should they have one for this one?
Yes. But it is a very dangerous moment. I mean, the only game plan they have is to inflict as much suffering on the people of Gaza as possible. That they are doing. But again, to advance their long-term political interests, they have no game plan for. Biden has no game plan for it. By the way, I think the Biden presidency is over with this. I don't see how he gets out of this unscathed. I think the American people by the day are becoming sickened by what's happening in Gaza. And it's the first time, really, that they're seeing it, right? Because it can't be hidden. Social media has been the best friend of the Palestinians.
Yeah, you
right?
bet, because, Dan, you know, if you look at CNN, it is so shameless, and MSNBC so, and Fox, all of them are so shameless in how they cover up crimes, okay? It's really extraordinary. Pasta, one of the things that, you know, going along with this social media thing is that when you do actually see what the bombing is in real time, it is really very, very difficult for an electorate, for citizenry to go along with that, okay? Because it depreciates what they what people think of themselves, their own sense of morality. Pasta.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of cracks in the dam, a lot of kinks in the armor. People are speaking up more than ever. I know myself, I've always wanted to be quiet about this whole situation because when it comes to pushing back against the Israeli lobbyists, they can really shut you down. They can demonetize you, censor you. But a lot of us have just said,
And they can call you an anti-Semite. This is their favorite thing.
All the time. Yeah. All the time they can do so. But I also want to just comment too on the plan. Because I don't know if I'm so sold on the fact that they don't have a plan. Because I used to say this all the time. The United States doesn't care who wins the war. They don't care who loses the war. All they care is that they have the war. And it seems like they just move from war to war to war to war. And, you know, once they get done over here with Ukraine and then Israel, they can move on to China. So I don't know if it's one of those things that they have no plan, because the plan is to extract as much money as possible and put it into the hands of the military-industrial complex. And I think they've been able to accomplish that here with Israel. What did they want, to send another $100 billion to both Ukraine and
I understand your logic, but they've really upped the stakes, haven't they? They keep upping the stakes. One of the lessons that we learned from the Cold War is that great powers don't go toe-to-toe. You can go proxy, yeah, okay? But, you know, the importance of Israel is so important to the political establishment, but it is being threatened existentially. I mean, it is to be or not to be. This is something that wasn't supposed to happen. Continue, Pasta.
Well, you're right about that. I think they kind of bit off more than they can chew, and it's going to be a hard plan to see what they want to do. But I think at the end of the day, they never had beef with Hamas. Hamas was just the excuse. They've always had beef. This is Israel with the Palestinian people, and they've wanted that land for quite some time, and now they have a chance to get it. So yeah. I think they're going to do their best to try to grab that land, move people into Egypt, and who knows what's next after that. We have to wait and see.
Kavark, I don't think the people of Gaza want to go to Egypt. They're tired of being pushed around. This is, what, third, fourth, fifth generation of displacement. They're not going to go. No, they're not going to do it. Go ahead in Berlin.
70% of the people living in the Gaza Strip are from the refugees who were displaced from their homes and towns in 1948. They are the third generation and the fourth generation of the Nakba people. They have a collective memory. People need to understand that the people, like, for example, I'm a third generation survivor of the Armenian genocide. We have a collective memory. We know what happened in the history. And these people are the same. And they don't buy to the narrative that they're going there temporarily and they will come back later. No. If they go to Egypt, they will never come back. That's why the people have chosen to fight there. And that's exactly why the Israelis are bombing the hell out of the Gaza Strip, because they want to spread desperation. Because if there is no desperation, people will not go to Egypt. And this is the only way to force them to go to Egypt. And to be honest with you, I have so many friends in the Gaza Strip. I can see their posts in Arabic on Facebook. And these people are crying blood every day. And we have to stop this as soon as we can, and there need to be an intervention now from the Chinese side or from the Russian side. They need to force these sides into the escalation, because this will go out of hand. And remember what Putin said the other day. He gave the permission to his MiG-30s to carry the Kinzhal missile from the Black Sea, because these aircraft carriers of the Americans in the Mediterranean.
Yep.
Who believes that they have sent two aircraft carriers just for Hezbollah? Of course not. They're also threatening Syria with these aircraft.
I'm glad you brought that up, because on the second day of this, I said, don't forget about Syria. This is business unfinished for these people here. Dan, I don't want to be apocalyptic here because I'm really worried that we could go in that direction. But the weakness that Israel has exhibited over the last 17 days or so will not be repeated again if they survive it. That's why I think Hezbollah, Iran, Hamas, others in Yemen, even in Syria, they're going to say this is an opportunity that can't be they may never get it again. That's scary, but I think that's a correct political calculation. Dan.
Well, I think that is true. I think you could see a regional conflagration for the reason you're saying. Of course, the one deterrent Israel has that we have not mentioned are nuclear weapons. It's the only nuclear state in the region, of course, undeclared, which is illegal, but nonetheless. And what will Netanyahu do with those weapons if his back is up against the wall? You know, we have to consider that. And I think it makes the situation all the more frightening and all the more reason that the U.S. should be pushing for an immediate ceasefire, which, of course, is the demand of the peace movement in the United States. Because if those other countries get involved, I worry that Israel could use nuclear weapons.
Yes.
Pasta, your thoughts. Go ahead.
Well, I just think it's crazy, too, what Kavork said as well. You know, China or Russia has to intervene. As an American, the only help I get if I want to end this war is the hope that Russia or China can do something as a superpower to push the Israelis to stand down. Because here in the United States, we have nobody, Peter. Nobody in Congress, nobody running for president that wants to stop this war, that will push back against the Israeli lobbyists. It's just a shame that this is going on like that. So all we can do is step back and pray. But as for Hamas, they're not going to really remove them, because they're more of an ideology now. And I think that's set, and that's going on its way.
Well, this is what we've already had four conflicts in Gaza, and Hamas only gets stronger. The only way they're going to get rid of Hamas is to commit a genocide, which they're doing under different guise, okay, slowly but surely. Again, it should shock the conscience that you can watch the immiseration of people that have been displaced since 1948, and you can watch their destruction on live television. It tells a very sad thing about the human condition right now. That's all the time we have, gentlemen. I want to thank my guests in California, Pittsburgh, and in Berlin. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.